Real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
By the way, just stay with me, Billy, because I want to read this out. I want to just get your thoughts on it just before I go to our next caller. So I was talking about Sinn Féin. We heard in the news today that Sinn Féin is calling for more asylum seeker accommodation centres to be located in middle class areas across the country. And not really the answer I think people were looking for. But anyway, they've lodged a policy document outlining their plan for international protection. They want a criteria such as the availability of GPs, school places, proximity to public transport and existing levels of disadvantage in areas to be taken into account when selecting locations. Of course, this makes sense. It seems logical, except it's ignoring the elephant in the room. Most localities do not want reception areas, it seems to be. I don't think we need a poll from the people in Greystones to find out they do not want hundreds of people dropped off in the middle of the night. But Sinn Féin seem intent on focusing on where the reception centres are rather than whether they should be there at all. And I'm wondering why that is. Now, today as well, Mary Lou said that nobody has a veto on who moves into their area. Now, Labour politician Ivana Bacik and Leo Varadkar said the same thing. We don't have a veto. But Mary Lou went on to say today that, you know, like anybody else, you know, you have, you know, when the government should communicate with communities, they have a right to objection, et cetera. But she's incorrect. They don't have a right to objection because that legal right has been taken away from them because it's an emergency and asylum centres or accommodation centres don't have any objections. You're not allowed to object to the planning laws in relation to those. So it's not like, you know, 10 houses being built up at Howth where you can put an objection in and only 5 get built because you don't have to have trees around them or painted a different colour. I mean, it's different. So I don't think she was correct in saying that. We don't have... So in those sense, we do have a veto if we live in Howth and they want to build 10 houses, but we don't have a veto, you know, if they want to put in 500 people into a Crown Paint factory in Coolock, for example. So the question I was going to ask about is, first, well, there's two questions here, right? Should you have a veto? In other words, should we not have that emergency legislation? And should people be allowed to legally object? And also, should we put reception centres in more middle-class areas? Or is that really the answer, or the best Sinn Féin can come up with?
I'll tell you what, Niall, make 3 points on this. Firstly, Sinn Féin are a party that are very clearly panicked and they've realised that they've lost the vote in places like Coolock and they're hoping that a policy like this will win the vote back for them. Secondly, my neighbours, the house is rented next door. And if the neighbours that are there that are lovely people decide to move on, I do not get a veto on who the landlord puts in there.
That's a different situation. That's only one individual.
It's an individual or a family. I don't get a veto on who lives next door.
No, but you do. Yeah, but hang on. No, Billy, you're wrong. You do get a veto to a degree. Because if, for example, a developer wants to, you have a field across the road from your house and wants to put in 30 apartments, you get a veto on that.
I understand where you're going. The point I'm making here is the Crown Paints factory in Coolock is already built. It's there.
But it wasn't accommodating people. There weren't people living in it.
In fairness, it probably should have a planning permission application for a change of use. I will concede that. However, you know, if they decide to put another factory in there or another manufacturing plant in there, the people in the area do not get a veto. It is there. The building exists. And the same with me. If my neighbour decides to rent the property to a family, I cannot go to them and say, I don't like that family. You have to rent it to someone else. Mm. It's a case. The property is there. The landlord owns it. The landlord has the right to do with their property as they wish. Now, I can stand outside and picket the house outside, but I'm not going to get very far with it. The third point I will make is in the area that I live, I believe they're an NGO. They came into what would be a very middle class area house. Now, I'm not living in Dublin, so the property prices would be about 450,000 to 500,000 a house. There was an 8-unit apartment block built in there. The apartment block came up for sale and the non-governmental organization bought it and moved in people who were recovering from substance abuse, alcoholism and stuff like that into that area where there's two schools across the road from it and they moved them into this area. So it is a case, unfortunately, these people in this area who had spent a small fortune on buying houses did not have a veto on this.
See, I'd be horrified if that happened. If I moved into an area, there was,
and I will not name the area, but there was condemnation in the area that this was allowed to happen. The auctioneer who sold the property got a lot of stick for selling it as a single unit in this way. And, you know, this happened. So this, you know, people being moved into areas...
But could you not object to it being repurposed, the fact that it's being repurposed?
It's not being repurposed. Technically speaking, it is accommodation and people are moving into it. That's it. It's not like it's an industrial unit that's being repurposed into accommodation. This is a... And it's not as if it's being turned into a rental or short-term let. This has been turned into accommodation. So, no, they
okay.
weren't
okay.
able
get, to... Getting back to the argument and Sinn Féin's policies, right? So they're saying that, you know, there should be more communication. I think everybody agrees with that. It's just like a rocket scientist to work that one out, okay? But the other thing is, you know, they're talking about the areas that people need to be moved into. In other words, they said they should be located in more middle-class areas across the country as well. Now, they don't mention upper-class areas like Talk or Killiney, but however. But here's the thing. Are we focused? Are Sinn Féin focused on the wrong thing here?
Of course they're focused on the wrong thing, Niall. And I'd love to know what Sinn Féin's definition of middle-class, lower-class, upper-class areas are. How are they defining that, number one? Number two, of course they're focusing on the wrong thing. The issue here is the sheer number of people that are coming in. I was listening to the radio on the way to work this morning, and someone made the reference that... to date, I think Roderick O'Gorman made a comment that by the end of 2024, he expected there to be 30,000 international protection applicants into Ireland.
Yeah.
It is now July and we have hit 30,000, which means we're possibly going to get to 50,000 or 60,000 international protection applicants by the end of the calendar year. So that's double what they're expecting. I have zero issue with people who have legitimate asylum claims coming from countries that are
A lot of them are not legitimate asylum claims. We know
that. This is why I choose my wording very carefully. As I said, legitimate asylum claims from countries that are active war zones that are entitled to refugee status. However, as you said, there are people that are coming via the UK from places like Nigeria, like Kenya, like South Africa, where there is not active conflict.
The top countries are Nigeria, Albania, Georgia, Bangladesh, Pakistan. There's no wars in these places. Don't get me wrong, I'm sure people are coming for a better life. It's fair enough.
Yes, and people are coming for a better life. And as I've said to you before, Niall, the onus is on the Irish government to put in a robust and adequate visa system to facilitate the skill shortages that we have
Absolutely.
In this country.
But they've done that. I mean, only recently Roderick O'Gorman reduced the criteria for coming to Ireland to work to get a green card or whatever it is and made it more available to people all over the world. So we've already done those things because, by the way, we welcome diversity. We welcome people with skills from all over the world to come to Ireland. Without that, our economy would be doomed, right? But this idea of, and you know as well as I do, the majority of people who are coming seeking international protection are not genuine. They're economic migrants.
I don't know that, Niall.
Roderick O'Gorman has said it himself. He said it himself.
Okay, fair enough. I haven't heard him say it. I will take your word.
No, he did. He said it himself.
I don't know enough people. To be honest with you, Niall, I don't know anyone in international.
60%, I think, was the figure he quoted. Although other people have suggested that's a very conservative estimate. It's probably a lot more than that, are economic migrants.
Well, if it's more than 60% that are coming here under false pretenses, I would say that is people that are lying to the Irish government on their application.
Of course,
asylum,
they are.
And they are committing fraud.
But 80% of those who came through Dublin Airport last year had no identification. 80%.
What
does that tell you?
If you're coming to a country without identification, my first question is, how did you get through the airport on the other
Well, you didn't.
Side?
You didn't.
Exactly.
Yeah, I know. There's no way you got on a plane without a passport or some sort of identification. You didn't.
The NGOs will listen to someone like me and say that I'm very cruel. I'm not racist. I'm not being cruel. I'm being realistic here. If I decided to get on a plane or a ferry and I did not have my identification with me, I would expect not to be allowed on.
And okay.
If I dispose of my identification on the way to my destination, I would expect to be detained when I reached the
firing. Well, you're breaking the law. By the way, it's in the Irish statute books that if you enter this country with no identification and no paperwork or no documentation, that you are entering the country illegally. It's in the Irish statute books.
I wouldn't expect to be given a tent. I'd be expect to be put on a flight back to where I came from.
Or put in handcuffs. Yeah, absolutely. But that doesn't happen, unfortunately, anymore. Well, I know there was a... But see, here's the thing, right? There was a period there before the election where the government were pretending to get tough so they could get votes in the European and local elections, right? And the Gardaí were told... I don't know who told the Gardaí 5 or 6 years ago, 4 years ago, don't arrest people who come in with no identification, right? But there was a period of time there for a few months where the Gardaí were arresting people. Five lads were arrested in Houston Station, for example, and prosecuted for entering with no paperwork. And they were being prosecuted. But they were being sent to Mountjoy for a night or something like that, or whatever it is.
But
they're still here.
Where did they go after that?
They're still here. So the point is, they weren't deported. They're still here. Nobody really gets deported. That's the whole point of this.
Niall, I don't know if it's true or false or whatever, but I saw somewhere or read somewhere that Roderick O'Gorman at a point in time had put out a video inviting people.
There were tweets. He put out tweets basically saying, you know, Ireland is a great place. Come on over. Yeah. He did it in six different languages. Yeah.
Was that legitimate?
It wasn't just him, by the way. It was the Minister for Justice as well. It was both. Yeah.
Like I said previously, with a visa system that is transparent and robust, like, that's fine. I have no issue with people coming, but to be inviting the world to our shores, like, I'm a taxpayer. I don't pay my taxes to house everyone from the world to come here and to benefit from the tax. I pay my taxes because, you know, I want my country to succeed. I want my country to be funded. I want a health service that works. I want a justice system that works. I want defense forces that work. I want a transport system. God, I could go on for hours about a transport system that we should have in this country. But, you know, I don't pay for the rest of the world to come here and to take from that system. I'm not saying that all of them do, but I don't pay for economic migrants to come here to the country. As I said, no problem with people with visas legitimately coming here, but economic migrants coming here without papers.
So I found the article from the news here, just to clarify, from 2017, April 2023. Sorry, to April 17, 2023. Integration Minister Roderick O'Gorman has defended a series of tweets in which he announced Ireland's asylum policy online in 8 different languages after he was accused of advertising Ireland's soft touch policy to the world. The tweets in question were posted in February of 2021 and outlined the government's plan to end direct provision and provide on-door accommodation to any and all asylum seekers in Ireland after just a few months. They were posted in English, Irish, Arabic, Georgian, Albanian, Somalian, Urdu and French.
Sorry, can you just go through the languages again? So we have
English, Irish, Arabic, Georgian, Albanian, Somalian, Urdu and French.
So as you said, two of the biggest countries coming here are Albania and Georgia. So we advertise directly to those people that come here.
Yeah.
You said...
So don't be surprised. Don't be surprised when they come and you're offering them own-door accommodation in a couple of months.
Nigeria, Urdu. Is Urdu an Afghan dialect?
No, Urdu would be Pakistan, isn't it? India.
Well, you'd have Pakistan. Urdu would be Pakistan. Probably the Kashmir area where you have northern Pakistan, Afghanistan. So, yeah, we've had a lot of Afghanis coming here as well after the Taliban took back over.
Now, he defended those tweets, by the way. He did defend those tweets.
We invited these people. Mm. Our government invited these people to come here.
Okay, well, hang on. Stay there a second, Billy, if you want to. Let me just go to Joe as well. Joe, hi, how are you doing?
Yeah, Niall, how are you?
Joe, are we missing some sort of trick here? Because Sinn Féin obviously are trying to... It's coming to an election. Everybody wants to garner votes.
Niall, we're all missing the big picture. We're all missing the big point here. Okay? At Christmas, when Leo Varadkar was still Taoiseach, he said Ireland is full.
Well, okay? He didn't use those words. No, he said Ireland has a capacity and we're at that capacity now. Yeah.
Same meaning.
Okay. Yeah, it does mean the same thing.
Ireland hasn't expanded. Things haven't changed. We're full now. There is no
from an accommodation point of view, not physically, obviously.
From an accommodation point of view, there's no room for the Irish. So therefore, there's no room for anybody else, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, that's not an opinion. That's a fact, by the way. It's a statement of fact. There is no room. Yeah. We don't have accommodation. We're making it up as we go along. Yeah.
But the other problem, Niall, is the tent city in town and along the canal, okay?
Yeah.
These people got into our country to seek their asylum, their protection. They went in to put their tents up. They were removed and they were told that they're breaking the law. 4 hours later, they were fucking back with their tents in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
So they have no respect for our laws.
Well, here's the thing. Who do you blame? Because it's hard to blame people taking advantage of a system that's available to take advantage of, rather than blaming, for example, the government come along with a big machine, claw machine, pick up the tents, destroy them, put them in the back of a truck. These are tents, by the way, paid for by taxpayers because the NGOs are funding this, right? And then those same NGOs, the next morning, are given them more tents to put back up somewhere else, paid for by the taxpayer again. Now, Simon Harris promised that would never happen again, and it's still happening.
Yeah, the whole system is wrong.
Okay.
Now, there is no government in Ireland. We are being ruled by the EU. Whatever the EU say, that's what we do.
Mm.
We're fools.
We just signed up to the EU Migration Pact, didn't we?
We did. But people don't know the real ins and outs of that, what we've actually signed up to. We didn't get a veto on that.
Well, we did get offered a veto on that. We could have been like Denmark. We could have said no. But we didn't. We had MEPs over there who just put their hand up like good boys and girls, didn't they?
No, yeah, I would say that
the general public
don't
know what that treaty actually entitles the EU to do within our country.
Mm-hmm.
Another pandemic.
One at a time. Billy, say what you want to say.
Yeah,
to show.
Before another pandemic, this treaty gives EU the power to put EU troops on the ground in our country.
No, that's not what the EU Migration Pact is about.
No, Joe,
that's not part of the EU Migration Pact.
Oh, Lord.
No, that's, Joe, I don't know what part of the EU Migration Pact. I know it's a large document, but there's nowhere in the document that says it gives the EU permission to put troops on the ground. That's not true.
I'd research that now, and
yeah, I can tell you now. I don't even have to look.
Joe, give me a chapter and a paragraph in the EU Migration Pact where it says that, please.
Doesn't say that, Joe. Anyway,
no, I'm just asking exactly where it says that. Give me that in any EU treaty. I challenge you.
I can't give it to you right now, but if I read the document, I'll give it to you.
Because you can't give it to me.
And to be fair to you, Joe, if you find it, email it to me. I'd love to see that. Because I can tell you from my knowledge, and I think of a little bit because it is one for election, that's not anywhere in the EU Migration Pact. I can assure you of that. And I don't know of it anywhere else.
I'll put my neck out on the line here. And Joe, if I'm wrong, I will come on and I will say that I'm wrong and admit that you're correct. But that is what you said there does not appear in any EU treaty.
Okay, well, if I'm wrong, I'll do the same. But I'm pretty sure that I'm not.
Okay, let's stick to what...
The onus is on you to provide this to me, Joe. Yeah. I'm not going to go find it, but if you can find it for me, I'll admit I'm wrong.
And so will I too, Joe. But here's the thing. The EU Migration Pact, let's stick to what we're talking about. The EU Migration Pact basically is a pact that the European Union decides, based on how many people come into Europe, that we take a percentage based on our GBT, and how much money this country has. Now, as you know, our economy is a false economy, so we have quite a large amount of people to take per head of population. But in saying that, it could be about 30,000 a year. Could be. We don't know the actual figures. We don't know the figures yet.
To build out on that, what it also does is it forces the migrants at the point of entry to be fingerprinted, to be photographed.
Absolutely.
And to be traceable. And it also means that...
But they should be doing that anyway now, Joe.
They should be, but it puts it into EU legislation. And it also means that they will be processed at those points of entry. And if they are found to be...
But here's the thing. They will be returned. Okay, but what I'm going to say to Joe is... There's all that in the pact as well, that there will be reception centres, they will be detained, they will be processed. People who don't have identification will be detained and processed quite quickly, and people will be given one opportunity for appeal, etc., etc., etc. If we don't, or we feel we have too many people, we don't have to accept them, we can pay money instead to the EU. It's an annual amount of money to look after that person within another European state. So, but here's the thing, Billy, we could be doing all of that right now without an EU Migration Pact. We don't need the EU. Yeah, but so what makes you think if we're incapable as Michael McDougall pointed out, from a staffing point of view and the logistics behind, as you mentioned, over 30,000 people, right? The logistics behind processing that many people, we can only process so many per day. What makes you think that if we can't do it now, that we're going to be able to do that in 2 years' time? We're not.
Okay, Niall. Let me answer. Let me answer that, Joe, if you will, Niall.
Yeah, just give me one second.
We have one border. We have one border with Northern Ireland in this country. We have because of the Rwanda policy, got a large number of people coming in from Northern Ireland, but we do not really have to police our borders that much. But, as you said, we didn't do this ourselves. The EU is now forcing us to do it.
Okay, sorry, Joe, you want to say something before I go into a break there? Go ahead, Joe.
You go for a little trip for yourself to Australia or America. You're processed before you get on your plane in Dublin.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
no matter who you
are. But you can't use America really as an example. Look at the problems they have on the border, Joe.
They have got problems. Look at the border. Look at the size of their border now.
Yeah, but I blame Joe Biden for a lot of that.
Look at the countries that are bordering them. Look at the poverty that's in those countries.
Yeah.
Okay? The countries that are closest to us, they're not poverty countries.
Yeah, no, they're not third world countries. I'm aware of that. Yeah. In other words, we have an ideal situation where an island surrounded by water. We should be able to protect it very well.
Countries, with people starving of the hunger, bordering the US.
Okay, do me a favour, because I have to go to Eddie too. Billy and Joe, stay there, please, if you want to. It's up to yourselves. If you have time, if you want to stay there and continue the conversation. Eddie, I'm going to come to you straight after the break. I'm so sorry. I just have to go into this ad break, and it won't be long, I promise. All right, sorry about that. I do apologise. It just ran away with itself. 087-188-0008. See, I remember the number that time. Somebody said, how did you forget the phone number or not? I've been saying it for 14 years, every single night, about 300 times a night, and yet do you ever get something just goes out of your head? Yeah, I had a Biden moment. I suppose. Now, Billy James, stay there. I'm going to go to Eddie and I'm going to come to you, James, next. Please stay with me. Eddie, hi, how are you?
Good evening, all you well?
Good. Eddie, okay, getting back to the original argument, is it really the answer to say, well, okay, Coolock is a problem because, you know, we keep focusing on underprivileged areas or areas that would have services, etc. And Sinn Féin are saying, well, then we need to, you know, separate them around, put them into more middle class areas, locate them in different areas, and there should be more communication. Is that the answer?
You know, Niall, after Mary Lou's little speech there, because we all know she was trying to garner votes for an election coming up in November, right? They had Piers Doherty on News Talk, right? Mm-hmm. And he came out with this rhetoric and said, it's about listening to the community. And someone interjected and said, well, what if the community says no? And he says, what do you mean? We'll dialogue with them. And he said, yeah, what if you do all that? And the community says, no, we don't want them. Because let's be honest, nobody wants asylum seekers in their area. And he went, well, they have to go somewhere. So they said to him, so you go through all your dialogue and then the community says, no, you're just going to put them there anyway. And he went, well, yeah.
So what's the point of the dialogue? You know what I mean? Yeah, so what's the point of the dialogue?
You know what I mean? Now, I'm going to tell you a story, right? A good pal of mine, he's a manager of a well-known hotel in the west of Ireland, right? And 3 years ago, the government took it over for asylum seekers. And they asked him to stay on and run it. He has to go around every single morning with a security firm and do a head count to see how many people are in each room, right? So there's two in each room. He goes in some mornings because he has to go in about 6 to 7 in the morning to catch people out. There's like 8 to 10 people in a room because they're ringing their buddy saying, I've got accommodation, come here. They're shite up the walls. There's needles in the rooms. They're smoking. There's weed. There's drink. There's people running down corridors naked. And he turns around to me and he says, I'm not joking. He says, if you think this is the next generation of workers to pay our pensions, he says, you're sadly mistaken. They're fucking the dregs of society.
No, to be clear, they're not all the dregs of society, but there are individuals.
See the videos he sends me?
I'm sure, yeah,
and I'm not joking in oil.
Yeah, there are individuals who would be the dregs of
society.
Like
what happened in Leeds, that's the way we're going to end up. That is the way we're going to end up. We should have never signed up to the East Migration Pact. We should have had a referendum. Irish people, something that's going to change the face of Ireland forever, we should have had a say.
Well, then you answer Piers Doherty's question then. So he says, if everyone says no, and Coolock says no, Dundrum says no, whatever, you know, New Tem and Kennedy says no. If everybody says no, well, then the question of Piers Doherty was, where are they going to go? So Mary Lou says, well, you know, we should be locating them in other areas, middle class areas as well.
Dawkey says no as well.
Dawkey says, but no, probably do.
I'm going to tell you, Noel, I'm going to tell you what I would do. I would do what Australia does. I would do what Poland and Hungary said. We're not taking immigrants because they don't mix with our culture. I'd say, right, show me your passport. Don't have one. Well, you have to have it to get on the plane. If you arrive in Ireland and you don't have it, quick turnaround back to where you came from. Simple as. That's what I would do.
Can I just ask a question, because it keeps coming up on this chat. Has anyone actually read the EU Migration Pact on the line?
Sorry, 48 pages.
No,
I was running for election. I didn't even read the whole thing, but I have a very good idea of what's in it.
I'm just curious if either. No. I'm sorry, Nenile. A good idea. You haven't read it. The two other gentlemen on the line have.
I read a bit of it. It's a long-winded thing. They're going to process people quicker, but I'm not. As soon as we make a ball of it.
It's 48 pages. I'll be completely honest. I haven't read it. I will read it because it keeps coming up, and I'm actually very curious to see if half of the stuff that I've heard about this pact is actually in here, because the gentleman who mentioned deploying of troops got me very interested as to whether that's actually in here. So I'm curious as to whether it is. I'll take it on. I'll read this and I'll come back to you and I'll answer questions on it.
Billy,
because
we can't even get people to leave this country when they fail an asylum test. They walk out the immigration centre in Mount Street after failing their asylum test and they're told to self-present at the country and at the airport.
I'm not disputing that is farcical, but what I'm asking you is what in here are you so opposed to? What's the government going to have to do that's in here that you're opposed to?
No. I get the question you're asking, Billy, and I understand the point you're making, that it's not going to make any difference from that point of view. But here's, you're saying the EU are going to be in control. The EU are going to make sure Ireland does it. The EU will fine Ireland if they don't do it properly. But I don't believe Ireland are, like Michael McDougall said in the Senate or in the Oireachtas Committee going back a couple of weeks ago, the Irish are incapable of doing it. We've proven, look at the mess at the moment. Every one of those individuals that are in this country, and you mentioned the figures there at the start, June was the record month, by the way. Every one of the individuals that have come into this country seeking international protection, many of them, by the way, chancing their arm, they're just economic migrants, right? They're not leaving this country. They're not going anywhere. Because what will happen is, it'll take months to process them. When they do eventually get processed, and let's just say 60% are turned down. They're told, sorry, you don't qualify. They're not going to be deported. They'll put in an appeal. After the appeal is put in, there's another 6 to 8 months gone. They're not going to shorten that time. They're going to lie to us and tell us they'll shorten that time. They won't. Another 6 to 8 months. Then they get turned down again. Then they will make an application to the Minister of Justice for the right to remain. And based on the fact that their lifestyle has changed and they've integrated into society, or they've got a job, or they've met a girl or something.
You're describing the current system.
But it's not going to change. Michael McDougall said it can't change.
Hold on just a second,
right? I'm going to give you a hypothetical here. I hypothetically say someone from Zimbabwe decides that I'm going to go to Ireland, I'm going to claim asylum. There's no direct flights between Zimbabwe and Ireland, which means he's going to have to land somewhere in Europe, right? If he doesn't declare that he is an asylum seeker at his point of entry under what I've seen in this pact, he gets to Ireland, he's turned back to the last point where he came in, where he has to register as an asylum seeker there. He has to get his fingerprints done, photographs taken, and then go to the reception centre there. If his application is successful there, then he potentially could be sent to Ireland as one of the places where he could go to. But it is at the point where he has been processed as a legitimate asylum seeker. There's no coming to Ireland and going through the process Niall described there anymore if this pact is implemented properly. And hypothetically, he's going to somewhere like Charles de Gaulle or Munich or Amsterdam. And that's
okay, Billy, can I ask you a question?
Just quickly, because I want to bring James in here.
And say, for example, they do get through and they get put in a building like the Crown Page Factory. Where do they go from there? You have Irish people who can't afford rent, can't afford mortgage. There's 440,000 adults living with their adult parents, right? Who have good jobs
and
that can't afford to live here.
Minister,
so when,
you
so when you bring in immigrants,
advertising and you have the Minister for Integration
Billy,
advertising
when you bring in immigrants
languages that people will have
with no education,
and
bad English, they're going to get menial jobs, lower paying jobs than us. And if we can't afford to live here, they won't be able to.
Hang on. Let me just bring in James. Let me get back to the original argument in relation to should they be put into middle class areas, as Sinn Féin suggested. James, hi. How are you?
How's it going,
James? Nice to talk to you. It's been a while.
Long time no talk.
Yeah.
How's things? How's all the family?
Good.
Just like me and you. Yeah. Children must be getting on great now, all four of them.
All four of them, yeah. Still only four.
You haven't done any more procreation recently,
no?
Busy man.
I think 10 years of changing nappies and oil is enough for anyone.
It's true. Okay, James, getting on to what Sinn Féin said, do you have any faith in Sinn Féin to do the right thing now to reclaim some of the voters they might have lost?
There's no faith in Sinn Féin at all. You know, they showed the true colours once they thought they had political power, let's say, or they were moving towards political power. They quickly showed their true face and what they would be like as the establishment. So I wouldn't really have much hope in them implementing any positive change, to be truthful. I do think placing these people into middle-class areas will be positive in the long run, though, because it will actually put pressure down on the establishment to actually implement some positive change. Because it's only when their voter base is going to be affected will we actually see any real change. Right now, they're strategically dumping them into areas.
But they don't get votes anyway.
Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael stronghold, so it's not really doing anything.
So you're not going to see them put into Dunleary, for example, where Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael pick up a lot of votes.
And Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, if you look at the actual backlash and if you look at their chance at the protest, it's all aimed at Sinn Féin because it's usually Sinn Féin areas that have been flooded with these people.
So Sinn Féin are kind of taking the rap for it.
Yeah. I've been used as the scapegoat, Fine Gael.
I suppose the part of that is because people depended on Sinn Féin, because in the last election, of course, they got the vote for change. So people depended on Sinn Féin to defend them and to oppose the government.
Sinn Féin thought that they were taking aboard the disenfranchised youth of the middle class and they could overthrow the working class of Ireland. And what they quickly realised was that the middle class youth left the country, so they lost their voter base by and large. And they are still dependent on the working class vote. But as soon as they thought that they were getting political power into the middle class communities, they quickly shafted their working class voter base. And it's coming back to bite them, you know.
Mm-hmm. Do you think Sinn Féin went too left too quick?
Oh, absolutely. Because honestly, no, they thought they were going to lap up the disenfranchisement of this, particularly of the middle class women.
Yeah, well, by the way, Billy, what do you think happened to Sinn Féin, Billy? I mean, to go from, 27% polling down to, the late teens. I mean, what happened there in a short space of time?
I'll use a quote I used to someone, Niall, that I don't think the terms nationalist and socialist mix well together in the same sentence. I think there was someone got my joke there.
Go ahead.
I think that, Niall, Sinn Féin's, what got Sinn Féin from a party that didn't have any Dáil representation and didn't recognise the Dáil in the 1970s, 1980s, to being one of the larger parties in the Dáil after the last election. They had to broaden the base. Excuse me. In broadening the base, they appealed to a lot of people in a lot of different ways, and I think they betrayed their original base. And, you know, the people that they appealed to found that, you know, there's not much substance.
The nationalists?
No, they betrayed their nationalist vote. I know that you've had Malachy Steenstein on, and I would think that Malachy would have been someone who would have probably supported Sinn Féin.
I don't know about that. I don't think he ever supported Sinn Féin.
Malachy terms himself as a nationalist. His people would have felt betrayed by the way that Sinn Féin went in the last couple of years. They appealed to a more populist narrative, and once people realised that Sinn Féin seems to flip-flop on quite a lot of things, people lost faith in them. They don't have faith in their ability to rule, and that shows. They're 12% in the polls now. They've gone from a high of 36 down to 12.
I know, it's incredible.
Monumental collapse.
Oh, yeah. I mean, James, so you believe by putting them into middle-class areas, I suppose the end result of that is that maybe there'll be a realisation by Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael then that we're actually doing something wrong. By the way, James, do you think that people should have a veto as to who moves into their area?
Well, like, this is a normal internal movement of peoples. No, this is a quite, like, historically unprecedented movement of peoples. What we're talking about is dramatically changing the demographic profile and culture of communities.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't, like, Joe moving from Lucan to Carlo. You know, that's internal movement, which is quite natural. When you have mass migration into an island with a small population, and then you're concentrating these large numbers of people into towns, like, I seen a few weeks ago, I think it was like, there was a town earmarked, I think there was 180 people.
Dundrum and Tipperary, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, of this little village.
Yeah, and double the population. Double the population.
And not only will that change the area demographically, that has given away the people locally, the democracy.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'd agree.
Yeah, sorry, Billy.
I completely agree, and one of the gentlemen challenged me there a few minutes ago. What are these people going to do when they go into this area? There's not jobs in places like Dundrum and Tipperary if the population is only 150 or 180.
180, I think, yeah.
If you double that, if you put in another 180, what are those other 180
actually
people
in, they're actually putting in more than that. I think it's 250. I think there's actually more. There would be more as people seeking national protection or asylum seekers, or whatever you want to use, than there is people in the town.
One of the biggest risks that we have in this country with the migration that's happening and with the distribution of people is that we will lead to ghettoisation of communities that will not integrate into Irish society, that will ghettoise, that will become angry, that will become socially deprived. Mm. And you'll have issues that are kind of occurring in France at the moment, and that happen in Leeds.
Sorry, James?
I wouldn't say that's a hypothetical future. That's pretty much evolving currently. There was a conference held down in Cork by an NGO group, and there was all representatives from the establishment parties, Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin, and representatives from the Guards. And it's this kind of migrant NGO group. And some of the inflammatory, outright racist language they were using towards the Irish people, and borderline incitement to hatred, and saying inflammatory things like about that fellow over in Blanchardstown where he was shot, that lad George and Kencho, to kill a black man is a badge of honour in Ireland. So the toxicity is forming. Like, it's not a potential hypothetical in the future.
Sorry, Eddie, you wanted to say something there. Go ahead, Eddie.
Noel, I said that I lived in England for 18 years, right? And I've always said we're about 20 years behind them in the way they're progressed to the way we are. Parts of England, you go where I live, Alum Rock, Birmingham, Pakistani, Muslim, Kensington, Liverpool, Bradford, Leeds, Leicester. They practice their own Sharia law, take the law into their own hands. That's what we're going to end up with. That is what we're looking at.
But they will accuse you of fear mongering.
Europe, we're the last bastion on the west end of Europe that people haven't settled in, and I'm amazed we've actually got this long out of it. And they're going to come here. Really.
Can I ask you just one question? Because I have to go to a break. Is there not a point, and I'm just trying to put a bit of balance in this, that we have to accept? And by the way, it pisses me off when politicians equate legitimate people coming here, to work from all over the world using the visa system or whatever it is, or genuine asylum seekers, and they equate that with people coming here illegally. So it annoys me when politicians do that all the time, because we should welcome diversity, of course, and we should welcome people coming from all over the world who work in our hospitals, hospitality and everything else. But Eddie, is it not a case that, maybe you and Billy and James and me were all doddery conservatives, right-wingers who don't want to see Ireland change, who are stuck in the past, and we have to accept that the world is a global village?
I'm okay with migrants coming in that have passports and have skills and southern country. People just turning up willy-nilly from the likes of Albania and Georgia that now are at war. I've seen a video the other day, Noel, of a Catholic church with all the Catholic things took down and it's now used as a mosque. That's not right.
No.
That is not right.
Well, where was that, by the way?
I seen it there a couple of weeks ago.
In what country?
In Ireland.
I'm. If somebody's aware of where that is, please let me know. I'm not aware of that. I don't know how the Catholic Church would have even agreed. The Catholic Church wouldn't even let people use the Catholic churches during the winter for homeless people at one stage.
No.
Yeah, sorry, Billy. Sorry, Billy, just quickly. What do you want to say, Billy, before we get to the news?
It wasn't me, it was James.
Oh, James. Sorry, James.
Well, that's a phenomenon happening all over Western Europe because the Catholic population is decreasing.
Well, of course, it is. Yeah.
So the church.
Well, it was decreasing anyway. The Catholic population was decreasing anyway, long before. Long before many Muslims came into Europe, so that was decreasing anyway.
I know, but now I'd just like to touch on to the point you made there a moment ago. We just footy duddies. I cannot think of one people throughout history that has peacefully accepted that dislocation in their own country. Footy duddies.
According to CSO, the study came out the day before yesterday. The population by 2057 will be roughly between 7 and 8 million, and the majority of the new population of Ireland will be, of course, all immigrants. That's based on different scenarios. That's just one scenario. If it continues the way we're continuing at the moment, it could be, depending on, obviously, childbirth rates, etc., it could be a lot more. But they're predicting between 7 and 8 million.
7 and 8 million. Now, from a demographic point of view, Ireland kind of has a hidden hand that the rest of Europe doesn't. We have Northern Ireland, and that will eventually be inculcated into the Republic. So that will kind of realign.
I don't know about that.
Okay. I don't know if that'd be my lifetime.
Okay, well, we can split hairs, but eventually it will.
I don't know. James. I think eventually Northern Ireland will become a separate state altogether.
Yeah, try to elect 1 million Protestants. Well, you're going to become part of one.
Yeah, okay, but that's a whole other show, James. Look, James, Eddie, and Billy, I have to go into a break and gone way over time. Listen, lads, thank you very much indeed. Keep texting, keep WhatsApping. The number is 087-188-0008. If you've any more calls in relation to that, and also after the break, by the way, I want to ask: are you lucky? I mean, are some of us luckier than others, or is luck just what you make of it? You know, do we choose our own destinies? Let me know what you think. 087-188-0008.
Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.